Sylvia Vetter, she's my guest now, from Oxford to India with Uncovered Love Secrets and More. This sounds good. That's what we can expect from local author Sylvia Vetter's upcoming book, Sculpting the Elephant. What a beautiful title. It's set to be released today at the Jam Factory. Sylvia, it sounds like there's going to be a hell of a party at the Jam Factory.
Yeah, well, the reason, of course, some of your listeners might remember, you see, I ran an antique centre at the Jam Factory, an art and antique centre, for 10 years and with 35 dealers, and we were a rather an eccentric lot.
Everybody... Well, you haven't changed, have you?
Thank you. And so, you know, there's... So the Jam Factory appears just very briefly in the book, and there's one character in the book who is not fiction, and she was a trader there. Her name was Ingrid Lindberg, and I think any readers of the book will think, if they read it and didn't know this, that this is rather ridiculous fiction, her story. But I can tell you every single word of it is true. She's a very minor character, but her family have allowed me to actually use her as herself.
How fantastic. There's a lot in the book that's very close to home for you.
Exactly, because as many of your listeners probably have heard me, well, last time I was on with you, I brought Tweena Gibb here. She was one of my Oxytopian castaways. And the time before that, when I was on with you, I brought another one of them, Victor Glynn.
We're not old friends, aren't we, Sylvia?
But I've never been on my own with you because, I'm talking about... other people. And I've written, I mean, for 10, 20 years, I was writing about other people. And so this book is very close to my own experience. Mm. So the main characters are Harry King and Rama Gupta. And so it's a mixed relationship. And, of course, my husband was born in India.
So you speak from experience.
I lived it. I've lived it, yes. And then there's the... And obviously, for 20 years, I was in the art and antiques trade, and for 20 years, I wrote about art. The background... Because Harry... I like defying stereotypes. I hate stereotypes. I hate putting people in boxes. And I think we should all get out of boxes ourselves and just talk to each other as one-to-one. So Harry is a Cowley boy and not privileged, but he's been passionate about art since he was a kid. Mm. And that saves him because when his father walks out on he and his mother when he's 14, the father empties the bank account. So Harry understands what it's like to live being careful of every penny. But he trains as an art teacher, and he teaches at Cheyne School, where two of my sons went. Mm-hmm. And he then inherited a little bit of money. And with it, he rented a shop in Walton Street, and he calls it Decorators. And outside decorators...
That's clever.
He accidentally trips over this beautiful young woman from Mumbai, Rama Gupta, who's a historian here doing PhD. And it changes both their lives. But it's one of those encounters that really, you know, the chances of them happening is minute, really. And that's, of course, my own story.
I'm bringing your own story into it right now, OK? So don't give any more of the plot away because, you know, people will, you know, have to enjoy the book Sculpting the Elephant. But so what about you then, when you fell in love with your husband, who was born in India?
Well, but it was a very dark time. So my husband was actually born on the wrong side of the border at partition. So basically, and his mother had died when he was two. So he was basically a refugee child, right? But he was exceptionally bright man. I mean, later on, he was on the governing body of Oxford Brookes. So, you know, and he was a PhD in quantitative genetics, which is why I go on about us all being uniquely individual, because we all are. And I've read his research, I know, you know, that it's actually scientific, not my subjective opinion. Anyway, but the thing is, he didn't have the money to leave India, but he applied as a young, very young man, graduate. He applied... he saw a job advertised by the Americans. So the Americans wanted maths teachers in Ethiopia. Well, he applied. He got to the interview. There were 50 people to be interviewed. And he thought, well, I don't stand a chance. And I think he came over a bit arrogant because he really didn't think he had a chance. Anyway, he got the job. So they paid for him to go to Ethiopia. And then from Ethiopia, when he'd saved enough money, he really wanted to do his PhD here. Mm. And so he went to Nuneaton and taught at the technical college there. And he was lucky at that point because there was actually, he didn't suffer any prejudice at that point. I only met kindness and friendship, which was lovely. Mm-hmm. But of course, it was to change. And it changed when we met. So come on then.
So that the day that you met?
Well, it was in Smethwick. There was a terrible racist campaign going on. It was the time of what's called the parliamentary leper. Now, I had a friend who also taught, I was teaching English as a second language to immigrant children in Smethwick Hall Grammar, St. Smethwick Hall Secondary Modern School. Now, another teacher said to me, oh, look, you know, there's this Indian teacher at Smethwick Hall Girls' School, and he wants to start a multiracial youth club to try and diffuse some of this hatred and prejudice that's around. Would I help? So, of course, I said yes, didn't I? Now, Smethwick was the place where there's the first Gurdwara in Britain. And if you've never been to a Gurdwara, if anyone you're listening has never been to a Gurdwara, go. I was a very, very poor, you can imagine. I mean, you know, I wasn't earning very much. And they give you free food. Well, I mean, it's a no-brainer, wasn't it? I met him on the steps of the Gurdwara after I'd had a nice meal inside. And he drove up on a Vespa. Now, I've been telling him ever since what a fraud he was. Because, I mean, I didn't stand a chance, did I? Not, you know, not in the 60s when he comes up on a Vespa.
Because that was sort of, you know, man about town. That was his ride.
Yes. But, of course, the reality soon set in because, you know, we set up the youth club. And, yes, and gradually our relationship became more than just the... you know, just working together.
You fell in love.
And, yeah, and but the thing is, you couldn't have the ordinary kind of courtship that my friends would have.
So sort of publicly?
No, because you'd got spat on. I was called a traitor to my race. I mean, no, it was Germany.
This was in the 1960s?
Yes, that's right. This was in Smethwick. Basically, Smethwick had been a Labour seat. But unfortunately, the Labour MP was Patrick Gordon Walker. Now, if any of you have watched United Kingdom, the story about Soretse Khama and Ruth Williams, you'll realise why he was the absolute wrong man to fight a racist campaign. Because he'd exiled Soretse Khama for marrying a white woman, Ruth Williams, right? But basically, the headmaster of the local primary school, Peter Griffiths, knew that he could win this seat if he fought it on one issue only, race and immigration. So every week in the Smethwick Telephone, there were stories like 18 beds come out of a house in Vicarage Road. A child who'd just come back from India with TB. It was headlines in the Smethwick. So there was no other issue, nothing else that Peter Griffiths discussed. It was just race and immigration. And basically, it turned the atmosphere vile. And and unfortunately, Patrick, we joined the Labour Party too at that point and went out with him. But you see, he couldn't confront. He lost the seat. Mind you, the good news was, 18 months later, there was a very quick election. And Andrew Folds, the Shakespearean actor, became the candidate. And Andrew was the opposite. Mm. Oh, my God. There was a colour bar in the Labour Club. He would not cross the Labour Club until it went. If he was in a pub and someone was racist, he would answer.
But going back, though, to the prejudice that you experienced from people in the street, I mean, that made things... Because love knows no bounds. When you fall in love with somebody, you fall in love with somebody, no matter their race, their faith, their colour, their creed, whatever.
Yeah.
Although perhaps it was a slightly different consideration in those days in the 60s.
It was rarer.
Yeah.
It was rarer. But, well,
because people were that people were slightly frightened of maybe the reaction that they would encounter. But you were determined that you would make this relationship work with your husband to be.
Well, I think this is where it becomes not romantic, because you see, and that's in a way, sculpting the elephant is exploring. I do believe we should look at each other as individuals, but obviously culture does play subtle thought things and your background. So the Indian idea of marriage and the Western idea are not the same.
Two very different
right?
things.
So basically, obviously this book will explore that in fun and hopefully fun and amusing ways as well as serious ones. But you see, so Aslan and I realised that if we were to be together, we had to be serious. That unfortunately it couldn't just be fun. We had to make up our mind quite quickly. And Aslan basically said to me, look, if your parents don't agree, we can't do it. It'll be too tough. But you see, because that's the Indian idea of marriage.
Of course.
It's to do with a family. It's not just the couple, you see.
But what did your parents think about it?
Well, my parents, I'm very, very proud of them. I mean, they'd both left school at 14. Although my father, if he'd been alive, you know, born 20 years later, would have been brilliant. He was an inventor. He was an extremely bright man. But, you know, he'd had no chances in his life, you see. I mean, he worked at Vauxhall Motors. And anyway, so I took him home for Christmas and they liked him. And it was just as well I'd done that. And we'd done it quickly because a couple of months later, someone from Smethwick actually went and knocked on my parents' door and said, did you know that your daughter's going out with an Indian? And they were a bit surprised when, of course, my parents kindly reacted by saying, yes, of course, we've met him and we like him.
That was all going on in the 60s and all that prejudice. And, you know, things have changed. It's significantly changed.
Definitely. Oh, my gosh, yes. Well, I mean, obviously, you know, it was with a little bit of fear and trepidation for your own children, you know, wondering when you're in a mixed relationship. But now we've got Harry and Meghan's child is going to be a mixed race. We're in a different world. But I still think we're in a slightly dangerous world at the moment, because I think, you know, you're getting some kinds of nationalism coming back.
Because of Brexit.
And all, yeah. Well, I'm just thinking even worldwide. I mean, not just... You see, my feeling is that racism is not white. And that's the other thing, right? Racism is not white. I understand why people think it is because of empire, because you had the European empires and then you had the American. But the truth is, in India, you'll find that in this there is some prejudice in England, but there is also some in India.
How does your husband identify? Because of his difficult beginnings and his mother dying when he was very, very young, and perhaps his you know, childhood was a little bit unconventional in that way, and then of course him leaving and then actually turning his back on his culture to a certain extent. How does he?
I don't think he ever did, but you see, this is another thing that I hope the book might explore a little bit. But in a light, again, I hope in a way that it's an easy read, it's not a difficult read. But I do hope at the end of it, people will just be a little bit more familiar and a bit more understanding with, you know, how Hindus think, for instance, or how Buddhists think. Because, you see, we're used to religions that tell you what you should think. That's what the middle religion is. But Indian religions are not like that.
I wonder how this book actually may change the mindset, the perception actually of its readers. And I suppose that's what you want. You hope that your reader
exactly
will think a little bit differently because of the
well,
book.
Well, I just... And the same applied, of course, with the Castaway books. If you notice, my three Castaway books, 120 people, but they came from five continents. They were every colour, every religion, almost every political background.
But united by Oxford.
They were united by Oxford and by their individual stories. And that's why I think it's so important we listen to each other and react to each other as individuals and start thinking, you know, Oh, yeah, that just assuming things when you see how somebody looks or how they identify.
This sounds like a fascinating read. It really does.
Oh, I'm hoping you do.
Sculpting the Elephant, it's released today, and there's going to be a bit of a release party at the Jam Factory. I wish you the very best of it, because, as you said, this is the first book where quite a lot of yourself and your experiences are written about in this.
Yes, yes.
So good luck with it.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you very much,
Sylvia. Thank you very much for letting me talk about it.